You are listening to Messenger Insight, a news and information program brought to you by the Baptist Messenger and the Baptist General Convention of Oklahoma. Hello and welcome to this edition of Messenger Insight. I'm Brian Hobbs, your host, and today we have a special guest on the program, Representative James Lankford of Oklahoma's 5th District Congressional Delegation. Representative Lankford, welcome to Messenger Insight.
I'm very honored to be here.
Now, I feel like you're part of the BGCO family with your time here and all the ways you've contributed to the life of Oklahoma Baptists and the church, and so this is a special honor. I want to ask you what that transition's been like, you know, being in church life, the ministry. You feel a calling to go to Washington. Can you take us back to that decision and some of the things that have happened since?
Yeah, I came on BGCO staff in 1995, started directing the Falls Creek camp starting in the fall of 1996, and continued to do that in the student ministry areas and directing the Falls Creek summer camp until 2009. And during actually the summer and fall of 2008, my wife really sensed God was calling us to run for the United States Congress. It was very confusing. It was very difficult for us, but it was one of those moments that was crystal clear. We were supposed to do this. And for about 7 months, we struggled through that journey and finally came to the point in March of 2009. I remember walking out of my church and saying to my wife, I'm going to be an old man one day telling my grandchildren about the time I didn't follow God if I don't do this. And I don't understand why or what, and I do understand the consequences of what that would mean, because obviously you can't run for a political office and work on staff at the BGCO. I understood that I was going to have to resign and step away, unemployed, full-time run, no background in it, but I knew this is what God had called us to do. And so did that. I remember that great conversation with Dr. Jordan, where I sat down at a lunch meeting with him in late March of 2009 and just said, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to resign. And then I started walking through the process, finished out that summer, and then didn't make announcements to people until the summer was over at Falls Creek and stepped away and started the run. But we know this is what God had called us to do. We understand this is a mission calling. I talk often with people in Washington, D.C. that also have very similar backgrounds that I have. There are several of the pastors that are there. There are some very strong believers that are there, and we talk often. And what I come back to is we cannot get so consumed with the task of legislating, we miss the mission of why we're specifically here. There are 750,000 people, 271 in the 5th District of Oklahoma, and there are a lot of people that God could have tapped to do this that may have been more capable at the legislative side. But I have that calling and that responsibility. I understand it's not just legislative, but it's also missional.
It's an incredible story, and while many pundits may have been surprised at what a quick impact you've made, I think Oklahoma Baptists knew that you would get in there and work hard. The Oklahoman had a piece that highlighted some of the things you've done. Having just celebrated your first year in the Congress, you've cast more than 900 votes, introduced 11 bills, and co-sponsored 149. You've held town hall meetings. You've traveled abroad to Israel, to Afghanistan. Now you come home, and we're grateful for this interview to the BGCO. You've stayed connected to the voters and people of your district. And you've developed quite a following. I was looking online with 20,000-plus likes on Facebook. You're nipping on the heels of Lady Gaga, I think, there. But one of the videos of you delivering remarks in the Congress is fascinating to me. It was a speech, I think, in January 2011, where you talk about the right to life is self-evident. Quoting the Bible and the Founding Fathers, you really took a stand for the unborn. And speeches like that and your involvement in the press have made us all proud. So I want to commend you for being faithful to the Lord when it seemed uncertain and stepping out and really, as a man of the people, going to Washington. Now, could we talk about what are some issues that prod you or move you and that you really want to be known for championing and sticking up for?
Well, as odd as it sounds, I really do see our federal debt as a moral issue.
Okay.
And for me, part of that calling comes from the book of Nehemiah. When you see Nehemiah, who's this ordinary slave cupbearer to the king, is very burdened and senses this sense of calling to go back to a place he'd probably never been before. His grandfather's grandfather's grandfather had lived there in all likelihood. It was 150 years between the time of Nehemiah and when Jerusalem had actually fallen. And so here he is heading back to a place he really doesn't know well and takes on the leadership there. And there were two key areas in Nehemiah. We know it best by him rebuilding the wall. In fact, Almost every building campaign for any church uses all the verses from Nehemiah about build together. We know him best for that. But the second issue, when you get past those initial chapters where he rebuilds the wall, it's dealing with the debt of the nation. Their economy had collapsed because they were heavily in debt to the nations around them, and they could not get out. And Nehemiah has a major focus the rest of that book. How do we get this nation out of debt? What do we do to get us back on a firm footing? So I do consider that a calling. I do consider that a moral issue as well. And it has been a major focus. We're now $15.3 trillion in debt as a nation. It's 100% of debt to GDP. That means if you take all goods and services done on every single company and every single American for a full year, that equals the amount of debt that we also carry as a nation. The last time we were this heavily in debt was World War II, but we owned that debt. We sold war bonds, and Americans owned our own debt. Now that's not true anymore. 47% of our debts are owned by people outside the United States. It's very different, and it's very dramatic what we've got to do. There are lots of hard choices, but we've got to fix this. And so that's been a primary issue. While I'm very passionate about the life issues, and we're going to move every issue that we can through the life issues, I'm very passionate about the debt issues in every way that we can possibly have to be able to take on that issue. And I'm very focused on a lot of family issues. I'm still a firm believer that we need more government when we have weak families. If we have stronger families, we need less government. There is a balanced relationship there, and the reason we have so much government right now is because our families are falling apart. If we can ever, as a church and as a community, re-engage into families and in discipling and mentoring the next generation to come up, we will not need as much government as we have. And so that becomes the solution. And as strange as it sounds, I went to Washington to find out what I already knew, that the church is really the key to our community. As we engage in real community, real relationships, taking care of the orphan and the widow, taking care of the family that's in distress, presenting the gospel clearly to people, it will make the difference that Washington, D.C. will never be able to make.
That's well said. And what I love about you and your leadership, you make issues so crystal clear. You're an effective communicator and voice. And I think you're exactly right about the national debt, and we commend you for your work on that. You hinted at this at the end. Now you've been in Washington, having experienced that. You've been in and around public policy decisions. You've also worked in ministry. Could you unpack that a little bit about what you mean about the church could really make a difference in the relationship between a strong state, a strong family, is a strong America?
Yeah. You cannot overstate the importance of the family, whether that be social service needs, the safety net that we have as a federal government, welfare programs, unemployment, food stamps, what we call SNAP now, all those different programs are all revolve around that the government's going to step in and do something that historically the families and churches and communities did together. Now, over the past 50 years, we've just turned more and more and said, no, the government take care of that, the government take care of that, government take care of that. While that may look very efficient from the outside in, what that has done is it's given the church the ability to be able to let go of what is really their responsibility, to take care of those in need around them and to engage in the community in unique ways that really serve people and present the gospel in ways. Many people don't need social services. They need the gospel. Well, that's not the responsibility of the federal government to do that. That's the responsibility of the local church to do that. And while there are things that both the church and the government can both do, only the church can effectively communicate the gospel. So while I encourage churches to stay engaged in the cultural issues of the day, life, debt, so many things that the church should be engaged in because they're cultural issues, you can't get so distracted with politics and culture as a church that we lose track that only the church presents the gospel. And if we stop doing that effectively, no one else picks that up. If the church fails to do some other things, other people will pick it up. But if the church fails to communicate the gospel and to clearly articulate in our culture, no one else picks that up. So we've got to do that, and we've got to do that well, and to make sure that's a priority and that nothing else distracts us from our ability to be able to do that, because that's going to be the cultural change. When I was in Afghanistan about 5 weeks ago, I can't tell you the number of times I'm walking among the people of Afghanistan, looking around through the culture and seeing just the degradation of the culture that's there, thinking, if the gospel had been present here and had made a difference in this community, it would be different in the society. And I know as a government, we get pushed all the time to say, you can't take a religious preference line. Well, I come from a distinctly Christian background. I see it with a different set of lenses and say, I think the gospel would make a significant difference in this place. And but that's the responsibility of the church and of our missions internationally. But that's also going to be true of here in America, that we would come here and say things would be different if the gospel was being presented well and was making an impact in the hearts and lives of people.
That's a powerful point, because I think it would be easy for the ordinary citizen to want to sit on the sidelines and watch the political goings on and either get discouraged and think there's nothing they can do, or encouraged in thinking that them just standing by and watching would be doing something. And so what you're calling us to is something better. And I think one of the unique points about you, you're one of the few politicians that clearly draws the limits, and politics is not all there is. And you understand ministry, you understand the power and transforming power of the gospel. Now, you have made a transition into public life. Could you tell us what that's been like, and then maybe some ways our listeners could pray for you or your family?
Thanks. I can't tell you how odd it is to hear people refer to me now as a politician. It's just such the strangest thing. And I'm still in a lot of meetings here in Oklahoma, and they'll say Representative or Congressman Lankford and all that, and I just laugh, and I usually will just tell people, it's just James. I'm just the same person that I've always been on that. I have a different responsibility now. For me, I see following Christ as the primary role of every single Christian, and so I'm not called to a occupation. I'm called to a person, and that person is Christ, and he has led me to this spot, and this is now the task that I'm doing to follow him. But really, my responsibility is not to be a congressman. My responsibility is to be a follower of Christ, and he has me assigned there at this moment. And so I try to take it with that perspective. And there are others that are there as well, but it's a very odd thing to walk around. I'm a chairman of a subcommittee, which there's such a large freshman class. There were several subcommittee chairs that they had to fill with freshmen. And of the 89 freshmen that are there, I'm one of the five freshmen that has a subcommittee chairmanship. So that's a lot of fun, but people walk around in Washington, D.C. and call me Mr. Chairman, and it just makes me laugh. I run into people in the grocery store, and randomly people at a restaurant, or when we're at the food court at the mall, some Saturday afternoon, I'll have people that will walk up, and they want to talk about politics, and they want to talk about issues, and most people are very encouraging and been very kind in the process, and we're great with that. But that's a big life shift. The biggest shift for us is that I get on a plane and I fly away. You know, 3 weeks a month, I'm in Washington, D.C., and fly home on weekends. Now, the people in my church at Quail Springs, they still see me every Sunday because I'm there, unless I'm preaching at some other church, some other place that weekend. But that weekend is still very normal for us in a lot of ways. But on Mondays, when I get up early and fly out on the red-eye flight, which is on coach, by the way, I'm not flying first class, and fly up there to D.C., it's a shift for us. I got married 19 years ago to my wife to see her more. And now we're in a season of life where God has called us that we're almost living two separate places. We have an office here and an office there. And our whole family is learning how to redo life, what my wife calls our new normal of being separated part of the time each week. So that's a big deal. And so as people are praying for us, pray for our kids and pray for Cindy and I and us learning this new normal. Everybody's doing great with this. But it's always an ongoing weirdness, and lots of people have family members that they do outside sales, or they're airline pilots or flight attendants or do trucking, and all kinds of families have this same kind of experience, and they make it work, and we are too. We just never have before because we've always done all of our ministry together as a family.
Well, we want to surround you in prayer and be lifting you up, because you carry a tremendous amount of responsibility and do it with humility. I think that's something Oklahomans love about you and have come to admire. You certainly have not been sitting on your hands for your first year, and I think people respect that, and it's making a great difference in our country for time and even eternity. We appreciate you coming on the broadcast today, and I want to encourage all of our listeners to check out your website for more information about what you're doing, to follow you through the social media. We've been visiting with Congressman James Lankford, as we know him, Brother James. And thank you for coming on, and let's have you back.
I'd be glad to come back and give updates anytime. Lots to be able to talk about what's going on there.
Blessings to you, and thanks for all you're doing.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Messenger Insight, brought to you by the Cooperative Program in the Baptist General Convention of Oklahoma. For more, visit baptistmessenger.com or find us in the iTunes store.